that it certainly was separately patentable over the belt. So, I arranged to have patents applied for and submitted an article to the Review of Scientific Instruments and presented a paper at an American Chemical Society meeting, I believe it was in San Francisco, in the spring of 1958, and had this all arranged so that the paper would be published about a month after I gave my speech in San Francisco. Well, this all happened. It all went off real well. The thing went through the patent office on the first office action. No problems at all. Clearly inseparable, patentable. Then, a few months after all this, I received in the mail from the Department of Commerce a statement that this was all secret and that I had to inform everybody that knew anything about this apparatus that it was now secret. So they broke their verbal promise to me. You want to have everything in writing when you're dealing with government officials, I'm sure. Well, of course, it was impossible to write to all of 60,000 persons who subscribed to Review of Scientific Instruments, and I didn't know what to do. I did write to everyone that we had sent reprints to or who had visited our laboratory and said certain words on this thing that I had told had to be said to people. Well, Philip Abelson, who had helped me get the money from the Carnegie Institution in Washington, and others took up a little fight for me. I wasn't able to follow what happened all the way. The Search Corporation, who now owned our tetrahedral press patents, took up a fight on this. And I do not know the details of what went on in Washington. I know that the whole secrecy situation on high-pressure apparatus was discussed in the highest of scientific and military circles. But one day at a meeting, a high official of the Pentagon showed up and told Commerce, kind of pulled rank on Commerce people as I understand it, told them that the secrecy was coming off. Now this was about 1959 or 1960, June of 1960, I believe. Well, the GE, they said it was not only coming off on my apparatus, it was going to be taken off on the GE apparatus. Well, the GE people, who had already had 6 years to get their patent matter straightened out, pled that they hadn't had enough time and they wanted an extension of 6 months, which was granted. And so, in effect, GE obtained 17 years of patent protection plus about 6 more on account of this secrecy order that was on for so long. It turned out then that my patents on the tetrahedral enamel press issued before my patents on the belt apparatus. In our university deal with Research Corporation, Research Corporation is to license people to manufacture a device. Any royalties received, Research Corporation gets 42.5%, Brigham Young University 42.5%, and the inventor 15%. Unfortunately, the Research Corporation chose to license the Engineering Supervision Company in New York City to manufacture and sell the apparatus. I had suggested to Research Corporation that they license either McCartney Manufacturing Company of Baxter Springs, Kansas, or Newhall's high-pressure outfit in Walpole, Massachusetts. Now, as the years have gone by, the Engineering Supervision Company, which now calls itself Barogenics, has done an extremely poor manufacturing job and has kind of alienated the entire thing. I currently am trying to get McCartney licensed. Research Corporation is still dragging their feet. But because of the very poor engineering and manufacturing job that has been done by Barogenics, the tetrahedral press which is indeed an extremely fine apparatus, has received kind of a bad day, and we haven't made nearly the money on the apparatus that we thought we would make. It's been making a total royalty of somewhere around $9,000 a year for the past 3 years, but I'm convinced that it could have been making 10 times that amount. As of now, the Research Corporation has licensed the Cartney Manufacturing Company to build a tetrahedral x-ray press, such as Dean Barnett and I have recently constructed. I say recently, it's taken us 4 years to design and construct and get the bugs out of this thing, get it operating. But a duplicate of this press is now being built for the French Atomic Energy Commission in Paris at a cost of $166,000. And it is our understanding that they're going to build a second unit, which will be ordered sometime in April. This first unit may be completed within the next couple of months. I'll be going to Baxter Springs to get it assembled, and later on, Dean Barnett will be going to Paris to reassemble it in the French AEC lab there after we are through with the assembly and testing in Baxter Springs. Regarding the diamond affair at Galactic, I have no regrets. Probably one of the smartest things I ever did in my life was to force myself on GE so that I went to work for them in 1948. Second smartest thing I ever did was to quit them in September 1955. The years here, I've found a great deal of support financially for the work that I wanted to do, had over $500,000 in grants, could have had a lot more, particularly in the early days, but felt I couldn't use it. I've had some difficulty in interesting other professors, but as time has gone on, have got some good ones. Barnett has been particularly good and has really taken a hold of the high pressure research. We've had hundreds and hundreds of visitors through here to see how we do the high pressure work. In the early days, they were just in here constantly asking questions, phone calls, letters. I think we have averaged something like 100 visitors a year. They've come from all over the world since back in 1956, 1957, when we finally got underway on our high pressure work again. There's not a laboratory anywhere that's going that I don't believe hasn't had the personnel here at one time or another to see how we do it at Brigham Young University. The biggest thing I've lacked for here is the time. Of course, having responsibility of director of research, this program's grown through the years, takes more and more of my time. I have taught occasionally through the years. The biggest problem has been finding the time to continue the research. Also, we don't have the facilities and the services that we used to have at General Electric. But all in all, I feel that I've been able to accomplish much more here than I would have been able to have done if I had stayed at General Electric. Also, things have turned out fine financially. Right soon, I began to have offers to do consulting. And I've been getting several thousand dollars worth of consulting each year. It's interesting how I first set my fee. The GE people wanted me to consult. I've already said that I couldn't consult under the terms that they wanted. But in trying to arrive at a consulting fee, they asked me how much I wanted. I was feeling rather smart alecky and not too interested. And so I quickly asked them how much they were paying Percy Bridgman. Bridgman came on as a consultant after the diamonds had been made. Well, I hummed and hawed a minute, and then finally told me $250 a day. I immediately said, I'll take $300. Well, their jaw dropped a bit, and they said, well, they hummed and hawed, and they, well, I'd have to talk to the top man. This was in Detroit. Well, I came back in just a few minutes and said, okay, we'll pay you your $300. But then the terms of the agreement otherwise weren't acceptable to me, so I didn't take it. However, the next company that came along and wanted me to consult, I told them $300 and they readily paid it. About a year and a half or two ago, I decided to raise it to $450 a day, and there still seem to be a sufficient number of companies that will pay that rate that this adds to my income substantially. I've had several job offers through the years. Three of them have been as directors of research. Booz, Allen, and Hamilton approached me for Kennecott Copper at one time, who wanted me to be director of research of a new lab that they were forming. Said they'd pay anything I wanted, and I could set up the lab, hire my own personnel, and even have the lab built where I wanted it built. I was a little provoked that I didn't ever take this one. GE came after me later on, I think 58, 59, sometime along then, and offered me $35,000 to be manager of their diamond lab in Detroit. IBM approached me at one time at a $35,000 a year salary to be director of a new lab that they were building. So even financially, I think that we've made out all right by making the transfer to Brigham Young University. Certainly it's been better for family. The children have access to all the cultural opportunities at the university. And of course, Shirlene and Tracy Jr. are now attending university, and it costs us a lot less money to be living right next door to one than to be sending them, say, out here from Schenectady, New York. This is a duplicate tape which I am making here on February the 8th of 1965. Again, I am sick in bed with the flu. The original tape was made on January 21st of 1964 when I was ill with the flu.
January 21st,
1954.
January 21st, 1964. So I've just made a duplicate of a duplicate.
Where's the original?
I've got it. But it doesn't necessarily say that it was the first one. I need to fix that, I guess. Let's see. Where is it? I guess that was the very end, wasn't it? Let's see.
Don't go, because you need to rewind it.
Seems to be the end. Okay. Uh-oh. You know what?
What? You didn't have it on?
I had it on. Oh, I guess I had it on.